a blur to me.
He's smoking weed now.
Hey, it's legal.
He don't remember anything about last week.
It's legal now.
It's all about today.
And they got some hydroponics now.
Right.
But it was tough last. Have you been monitoring Muskegon Heights?
I've kind of been keeping a little closer look than I usually do over that time, man. I'm praying that we can get some things figured out, man.
Yes, sir.
Got to get some things figured out.
Yeah, those spontaneous decisions, like I don't know, I could get you back at square one.
It's, you know, there's an old saying that everything rises and falls on leadership. And man, leadership is not for the faint of heart. You gotta really be tuned in, man. You gotta be committed. You gotta see the bigger picture all the time.
Right.
And you know, leadership is about, in my opinion, leadership is about vision. You gotta see a little bit further. Got to see a little bit further down the road than what most people who are interested but aren't in that decision-making, you know, situation, that decision-making seat. You got to look a little bit further down the road. You got to try to plan for the unintended consequence of the decision that's made.
I'm not used to you using simple words like that. Thank you. I thought you were going to say apparatus in those. Because even though he used them words, you got to, where my phone at? Let me see if I can see
you
what that
Google
means.
To translate.
Yeah, right.
You got to Google translate. Right.
Well, here you go. Uh-huh. You have to, as a leader, attempt to regulate and hopefully minimize the maleficence.
Oh, see, there go a word.
That's the word for the day, Muskegon. Maleficent.
The decision that's made.
What? How did you pronounce that word again? Maleficent.
I need to minimize that. Maleficent.
It's on somewhere.
It's down there. It's okay. Maleficent.
Word up.
That's why
I ain't never heard that.
It's like something that would follow a butt whipping or something. Maleficent. Or right before a butt whipping.
Yeah, that usually comes before.
Before the butt whipping.
Yeah.
Wow. Judge, so you having fun down at the courthouse, Judge?
Well, you know, poor man, that's a tough. if the question is, excuse me, am I still enjoying the work?
Mm-hmm.
I am.
That's good.
Very much.
Still committed.
Absolutely.
You haven't checked out on Muskegon.
Have not checked out. Not mailing it in. Showing up every day.
Wow. Wow.
Putting it in.
Are there any? Last time we had you on, it was 5 months ago. In January, anything new that
not really
can talk about?
Not really, you know. Our legislatures, I think, which is endemic to the current environment, political environment we're living in, aren't doing a ton of legislative creation. Mm. You know, it's a lot of. Boy, it's a lot of fighting and people trying to hold positions and hold situations in place. You know, the level of legislative initiatives that are going forward, I think, is really at a low point for us. So that's a long answer to no. There's not a lot new coming. I think the one thing that is kind of floating around in the air, I don't know if it's going to get the oxygen it needs, is that there is a push by a faction to create this automatic or presumptive joint custody, that the order must be that joint custody is what's called for in situations, divorce, fraternity, that kind of thing.
So that would be law.
That would be the law.
No matter if one is just off, just can't handle it at all, automatically be joint custody.
The way I'm hearing it proposed, of course, there's always the opportunity to modify based on, you know, those types of situations you're thinking of, where it's called for. But the law right now does not require you come to court in a divorce situation with children, and the case is made, and then the court makes the determination of what the circumstances of custody will be.
Mm-hmm.
This law, I think, is envisioning the idea that you don't even do that. You come to court, you get your divorce, and the court must enter an order of joint custody, as opposed to taking into account the circumstances between the two co-parents and whether that serves the best interest of the child or not.
Does that mean the same thing if me and my wife had a child when she wasn't my wife? Mm-hmm. I was baby daddy and she was baby mama.
Mm-hmm.
From what you've seen, I know it's not law yet, but from what you've seen, would that affect those decisions also?
Yes. Any situation where custody is going to be an issue, and that's every situation,
right,
with children and parents, mm-hmm, regardless of the status of the parents, whether it's a paternity action, whether it's a divorce action, the court would be required to enter an order of joint custody. And then you would have to work from there to modify it based on the circumstances. Right now, the way it works is there's sort of what would be considered a rebuttable presumption of joint custody, but it's not a requirement of the court.
Mm.
So you go through the initial hearings and the custody fight.
Mm-hmm.
And that first order is still at the discretion of the court based on what the facts that are fleshed out are brought to the court as it pertains to best interests of the child.
So if this law takes effect, let's say whenever they go back in, would you have to go back in all your divorce cases, all your child support cases? Would you have to then go back in and order all of those joint custody, and then they would have to come back in and say, well, we're not doing
just moving forward.
Moving forward. Generally,
okay,
the law that is new laws that are created for the most part are considered or are from that point forward. That would be sort of a circumstance that's called an ex post facto law. Mm-hmm. Ex post facto laws are almost non-existent. It can happen based on a very specific circumstance, but for the most part, you can't apply a law ex post facto. You can't apply a new law to an old situation.
Oh, okay.
Are these terms Italian or something?
What's that?
Ex post
facto. Latin, I believe.
Ex post facto. Latin. That's Latin.
Latin. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, they're mostly
after the fact.
So if we translated it over to Detroit for us. Translated over to Detroit English or West Michigan.
If we done hollered at you already.
There you go.
Now, Judge, you all have a lot of different courts down there in the county building now.
You mean like specialty courts?
Specialty courts.
Yes.
Veterans court,
mm-hmm,
drug court, mental health court.
Yes.
Isn't there another one? Drug court, veterans court, mental health court.
I can't think of another one except
for mental health.
My new court.
Oh, okay.
That's new. That's what's new.
Okay.
What's your new court?
I have started. We've started a court that focuses on foster teenagers,
mm,
who are not primed, who are not on a path to being adopted.
Okay.
They're not going back to their parents. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily adoptable. So the permanency plan for them is what we call APLA, another plan for lifelong living, or MYOI, youth organized independence. And I tell you, Leslie Slater, you know Leslie.
Yeah, yeah, yes, definitely.
Leslie Slater at DHHS, who she and the folks that she is supervises, they do a magnificent job. Good. Working with kids who are in that cohort.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of her vision. She came to me, she said, Judge, would you be willing to spend, you know, some extra time working with the kids we work with, those who are of this age and who are not going to be adopted, who aren't going back to their families, and they need to stay engaged with the services that are provided for them. Because, you know, kids get to that age, man, especially when they get to that 18 age, and they're like, I'm done with this. I'm sick of court. I'm sick of, you know, social services. Folks let me down. I just want to be done. I'm hitting the road. I'm headed out. And what happens is they miss out on just a tremendous trove of resources that are available to them. I mean, the state of Michigan does a wonderful job of providing the same things that you've provided for your children, Rob, mm-hmm. and you provided for your children. Mm-hmm. You know, they help with the car. They help with getting that apartment. They will. There's two or three kids on my caseload who are enrolled in college, and they're getting tuition covered.
Oh, wow.
You know,
wow.
All of those types.
They still
of things.
Help the kids.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Oh, wow.
That's major.
Absolutely.
So what's the age major. Bracket on this, Judge?
We are trying. We're kind of forming it as we go. We're focusing in on kids who are like in that 15, 16 age up. Because by that time, you know, it's pretty clear that adoption is not going to be an option for them.
Wow.
Either by, you know, nobody selecting them, or a lot of them say, I don't want to be adopted. You know,
they have that. They can say that now.
They always could say that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's always been the law.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't make that child be adopted.
Oh, wow. So Leslie Slater.
Yes.
We need y'all see her. Y'all see Sister Leslie. Give her a hug.
Yes.
Give her a hug for correct. Because she probably is not doing a press release on it. You know, just implementing things.
Leslie and Lisa Smith. You know Lisa? Lisa is one of the managers at DHHS, okay. too.
I'm not sure.
She's a Fox.
Okay.
Lisa Fox was her maiden name. Good people, man.
Good people.
It's her and Leslie, man. They came up with this idea, and they came to me. So what we did is we kind of approached State Department of Health and Human Services and the Michigan Supreme Court. And what we got was, hey, why don't you guys give it a shot? You know, so nobody's putting any money into it yet.
Hmm.
But let's talk about it after, you know, a certain point in time. Let's talk about it and see if we can make this, see if we can replicate the work that you're doing. So we're kind of piloting.
Wow.
This youth and transitions court.
So other counties might start to emulate this.
Oh, absolutely.
And it started from Leslie Slater and Lisa Smith.
Yep.
Big up to these sisters. Big up to these sisters. That's
big
major.
Up to them,
Got some online comments, Judge. Pastor Jolaine said, thank you, Judge Pittman. We try to support those youth at Step Up Muskegon. We support youth 18 to 24. He said, adoption is hard because it means giving up your identity to mm-hmm. many young people. Yeah. Brother Will Robeson said, that's awesome. Those foster kids usually get lost in the shuffle once they age out.
That's right. That's right. And we're trying to accomplish a number of things. first of all, obviously, we, like Will said, they get lost, and we don't want to get lost. Mm-hmm. But then they take sort of the easy way out, which is to just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do is to help them to appreciate, just like all teenagers need to appreciate, be cool, slow down, let people help you. You know, kids who come from good families and solid homes and have no issues like these, they want to take off and go, right?
Right.
You guys wanted to take off and go when you turned 18 or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to Michigan State and didn't come back home until they closed the dorm. You know, that kind of thing. We're trying to get them, we're trying to be sort of in the position of being surrogate in what we do, that your parents or your guardians or your grandparents or those people who poured into you when you were young did for you.
Wow.
Good advice, right. You know, wise counsel, pointing out where the resources are, challenging them to continue to allow themselves to learn and earn what these resources are. I got kids, man. I just saw a kid this past week. He's in his third year at Western. Wow. He hadn't paid a dime for his college education.
Well, wow. People can say a lot about America, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I can't call you, bro.
Yes, you can. Judge. Yes, you can.
I'm just respecting him.
Please call me, bro.
Don't
they
do
can
that.
Say a lot about America. But what we're doing for people to get them second chances, it's not happening. I'd have been to 37 countries. I don't think I've seen it.
Yes.
Maybe one.
I hear you. Well, you're a world traveler.
And this is amazing.
You know it.
If you mess up here, you can bounce back.
You can bounce.
You mess up in some of these other countries.
You're done.
You're through.
Your kid's going to pick up for you.
Right.
And that is the beauty of this country. Mm-hmm. While we're getting ready to celebrate Juneteenth. No, thanks. Shout out to our ancestors. Wow.
Veterans Court. You know, you kind of explained your new court, the Veterans Court, you know, for people who don't know what that is. And then the other courts.
Well, all of the specialty courts are designed, and all of those are focused on adults, and all of them are accessed by the original situation of a criminal charge. The old approach obviously was you commit a crime, you stand before the judge, and you get laid down. The impetus behind these specialty courts is you commit a crime. We take a look at what your circumstances are. There are issues in your life that have helped to contribute to you getting into the kind of trouble you're getting into. Maybe you have some undiagnosed mental issues that need some attention. And if you were getting the appropriate attention, you wouldn't be committing these crimes. Maybe as a veteran, because of, unfortunately, sometimes how poorly resources and services have been provided to veterans or not made available
to them.
Come through our court. There's a panel, or come through that veterans court, and there's a panel of people who are able to get you plugged into the right situations so that you no longer feel compelled to be antisocial or on the criminal side. Sometimes these folks have all of this going on. So what's been understood over the years here through the advent of paying attention to circumstance and not just situation, not just behavior,
right,
not just criminal behavior, is that it's actually more cost effective to address those issues than it is to simply stay on this hamster wheel of criminal activity and sanction, activity and sanction. Because what you get is you get people who walk away from this. They're whole, they're taxpayers. They've gotten jobs. They become fully contributing. And whatever it costs to help them get there, they put back into society tenfold.
Like the mental health, because I
open the phone now. 231-722-8338.
231-722-8338. Rob, trying to tell me my mic is not on. Thank you. I turned it down. 231-722-8338. Open up the phone now. If you got a question or comment for the Judge Pittman, being open up the phone line. Go ahead, Rob.
The mental health court. You mm-hmm. talked about the veterans, the mental health court.
I mean, you know, same.
Is it same thing?
Though? Same principle. You know, people keep showing up and being antisocial because they have undiagnosed, misdiagnosed, untreated, mm-hmm. You know, mental health components that are driving this antisocial behavior. So if they fit the criteria, and each one of these courts, you know, has criteria that has been created. If they fit that criteria, they get the wraparound of services that help them to stay connected to where they need to be as they're going through the probationary period that they would probably be involved in anyway. So it's the same principle. It's just figuring out and dealing with what the circumstance might be, what your issues might be.
Because mental health is a serious issue we don't deal with, especially in the Black community. I think that's wonderful what they're doing. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, I think it's shooting a water gun at a 5-alarm fire, but at least you're shooting. You know, I mean. The healthcare system in our country has become just, you know, and of course, you know, resources are limited everywhere. But if you go into that jail today, the number we get in the number of people in jail every morning, 338 people in jail today.
Wow. Mm.
And if you looked at that 338, a solid third, 110, 120 of them are there more primarily because they have untreated, undealt with mental health issues.
Wow.
Than the criminal behavior. Now, don't get me wrong. They have committed
crime.
Mm-hmm. They've done something criminal, but it is. Part of it's part of what they are coming to as a result of their mental health deficiency. And there's nowhere to put them, if we use that really lousy term.
Right.
There's nowhere for them to go. So because, you know, all of the regional and local health institutions are closed, you know.
So, Judge, what percentage of those people do you believe probably need inpatient care?
I'd say a solid third of them.
A third of them. They're in this institution getting mental health treatment, counsel.
And it's woefully inadequate because I can't spend as a person coming from Health West, which is the county health mental health provider, major mental health provider.
Right.
I can't spend the kind of time I need to spend with each of you who needs the help that you need, as opposed to if you were in a facility that was geared towards dealing with your mental health issues 24/7. You're locked down 24/7. It's just that 24, that full day, you might get half an hour, an hour's worth of some attention, maybe every other day or every couple of days, as opposed to everything being geared towards your problem, you know, your issue.
What it was like that at one time, though, right, Judge?
That there were these
mental health institutions that were treating.
Absolutely.
And crime was lower then, or was it higher? You know,
it's hard to compare because of all the other variables that are involved. Right. You know, you're talking about different points in time,
right?
You know, you're talking about different economic circumstances,
right?
those times were also times where employment was more plentiful. Mm-hmm. Those were times where there was less, I don't know, attention paid to the idea of the retribution behind criminal behavior. You know, there was a big swing at some point, as you recall, in where people were saying, yeah, lock them up.
Yeah.
Just lock them up.
I saw it in the 80s.
Yeah.
That's how I ended up working at the prison system doing, you know, crack cocaine. And then you had Governor Engler start to shut down these mental health institutions, and they all end up going to prison.
And that's a trickle down from the federal government on down.
Wow.
You know, federal government started reducing the money that comes into a state for that type service. A state's got to pick up some of that cost. And so now they have to begin to make some decisions. So you remember Traverse City used to have this big sprawling mental health complex.
Right.
It's basically shuttered. Kalamazoo. Remember Kalamazoo had an incredible regional facility. I think there was, a facility here. I can't remember the name of it. But you had all of these safety nets, these institutions, these places. Don't have them anymore.
Wow.
And we're getting less. And the same is happening in juvenile, in the juvenile world.
Right.
Now, what about the drug court? It's the same thing, treatment-based.
Exactly the same thing. It tries to deal with those who are trying to stay on track with their recovery. Probably, feels a little different because drug treatment has been around for a long time. But that's pretty much the same principle, same idea that's involved. And if I'm saying it, man, I had the first drug court. I had the first specialty court in the county.
That's good.
Back in 2000, when was 9/11? 2001. We started a juvenile drug court. That was the first specialty court of any sort here in Muskegon County.
That's why you're a legend. WBS LP 103.7 Muskegon, Muskegon Heights. We're live with Donald with Judge Pittman. Can you give us 15, 20 more minutes, Judge?
Oh, man.
It went quick.
I know, it went real quick.
I'm like, what is he doing? It ain't. I'm looking at my watch.
Time rolling when he dropped it. This is College 301. This is legal, whatever, 301.
Well, y'all had a tough week last week, man. So
no, it's okay, Joe. We good now. No, Rob sent me one of those gummy bears. So
not one of those gummy bears.
Don't remember nothing, anything.
Well, before we move away from that, I want to say this to you guys, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Thank y'all for the value that's added by local radio that is available for a community to be able to carry on the conversations that you guys carried on last week in the face of, a real seminal moment, especially for the city of Muskegon Heights. Thank y'all, man. Where else could this have been fleshed out in the way that it was fleshed out? Barbershop, beauty shop, church,
but
you guys are reaching so many people and here's what was cool. The airwaves were open to everybody.
Yeah.
If you had the guts to step into the square and speak on where you come from and what happened.
Right. And thanks to those who came in, from Miss Merriweather to William Kitchen, who voted for her dismissal, to Ronald Jenkins, who voted to keep her. William Kitchen could have said, no, I don't want to talk.
Absolutely.
He decided to come in and defend
absolutely
his vote. And Ronald has always been transparent. So, and for disclosure, the mayor would have came in too. I did talk to her afterwards, but there's been so much on the airwaves that she had been advised not to talk after the interview with Ms. Merriweather.
And it was a lot that came out during that interview.
And the interview with Perlett, you know, I know everybody who's involved, okay, just like you guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we love who we love, and we have regard for who we have regard for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not getting into that.
Right.
But I know Perlett professionally, her being in the legal profession. She's sharp, man.
Yeah.
She's sharp. She knows, and she's good people.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's on leadership, Judge. Is mm-hmm. it hard to bring change into
absolutely
fragile institution that's not used to towing the line, not used to going by the rule, not used to being disciplined,
man,
or just used to, you know, just getting by?
Mm. The dynamics in a situation in a place like Muskegon Heights are fraught with just all manner of consideration that adds to the already, I think, monumental difficulty of being in a position of leadership, especially in this particular climate that we live in this country right now. Everybody's being forced to do more with less.
Mm-hmm.
Our politics are as strident and as stratified as they've ever been. And you add into that you're dealing in a situation with people who have known each other their whole lives.
Right.
Right.
Families are close.
Families.
Yeah.
You're dealing with situations where the city, for instance, or the school district, for instance, are pretty much the primary employers in that community. So it means even that much more when those difficult but requisite leadership decisions have to be made. You add in the natural human element of personality and what that brings from one person to another and how people interact with one another. And oh my God, it is so incredibly difficult. You know, the work that I do, I'll take the onus off of them. Let's put the onus on me for a second. The work that I do in my home community, I grew up here.
Right.
I know everybody.
Right.
Or if I don't know them, they certainly may know me.
Right.
Right.
But yet, from day to day, I am put in the position of being as fair an arbiter of the circumstances that are presented in my court every day, regardless of whether you grew up in the neighborhood or not. And every week, I'll say it that way, maybe not every day. I kind of think every day, but let's just be generous. Mm-hmm. Every week, I'm put in a position where I have to make life-changing, life-altering, difficult decisions about somebody's situation. And in some of those, many of those circumstances, it's people that I know, maybe not close enough to have to recuse myself,
right,
but I know them. Or I, if I don't know them, I know somebody connected
right,
to them.
Right, right.
Man, that's uncomfortable.
Right.
Every day. But if you step up and say, this is the role I hope that you will entrust to me, then you got to be in all the way.
Mm.
If you go out and campaign and say, elect me, I am going to do well for your city, then do well for the city. Not for that person, not for this person, not for that, I don't know, thought, but do well for the city.
Yeah.
You got to get bigger. That's why, you know, I started the conversation when we were talking earlier. You got to have some vision. You got to look down the road past what's right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You got to look down the road because the decisions that you make have consequences far beyond what it is that is going to happen in this moment. It might feel right to say this thing, right now. But in the scheme of things, is it going to turn out the way you need it to turn out to help ensure that you fulfill the vision that is necessary to help people who are expecting you to help their situation? Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're getting that done these days like we need to.
We've been here 24 years and we cover a lot of cities, you know, around the community. I think it's been our community during these times, from the school system to the city government, that's been highly fragile and unstable, where we've seen our leaders, this is the problem, our leaders get dismissed in such a way that it leaves them damage.
Yes.
But you don't see it from the other surrounding school, the white, I'm just saying, the white districts, the suburban, rural areas. They release their people with dignity. They're still able to go on and get another job.
Yeah.
There are people here that's working in the educational field that were fired from other jobs and others in these other surrounding communities, but they're working in the field now. People like Dana Bryant was damaged so bad. It was hard to recover.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's a cycle.
Yeah.
Like what is it about our culture? It has to be a culture thing. That's how we treat our leaders.
Man.
What they bombed, didn't they bomb a superintendent house?
Yeah, Joanne Roberts.
Bombed.
The concern about what she did became vitriolic, became antagonistic, became angry, and wound up with someone, you know, manifesting that anger by actually putting her property and herself in danger.
In danger.
Because you're angry about the decision that she or the board made that you didn't agree with. So it's man, you there's so much about it, man, that you just hit that you could spend the next month.
We need to study it.
Talking that about needs this. To be,
you want a documentary about that's one. Yeah. That's one, brother. A documentary on how we blacks have treated our black leaders from, and there are institutions around here that have recycled black leaders. And I'm sure sometimes they might have deserved to be let go. But it's how. It's how we leave.
It's how. I think that's an excellent point, PA. I think you hit something really, really salient about the idea of how our institutions that are led by black folks, how our institutions and how those who are affected by the institutions internalize and personalize what has to be done in order for the institution to continue to operate.
Right.
You know, I take the onus off others. Let me talk about from my situation. It's my hope, it's my prayer, it's my endeavor to not make personal what has to be done in the effort to be this arbiter of what is the decision that has to be made. My prayer on the other side, my wife's prayer is, please don't you take it personal. What my husband has to do in the role that he serves in. My approach, and you know, I'm not here to tell anybody that I know what's right, what's wrong. My approach is to not allow what I do to become who I am.
Exactly.
If you're a leader in one of these institutions that is under attack, or that you feel like is under attack, take a step back. And maybe think about the idea, am I sending off the signal? Am I giving the impression that I am what I do. Because if you are, then you're opening yourself up to the vitriol that comes from others. And you're creating a mindset in yourself that I'm being attacked.
Well, you made me think about the book on James Allen, As a Man Thinking, I am what I do, what I think.
That's
my
right.
actions become.
That's right.
That's who I am.
That's who I am. Yeah.
That's
a moment that a leader has to engage in.
I am what I do.
I am what I do. And folks who are in the position of, you know, when you voted for them or your candidate did not get elected, it's not them being personal to you for you to take such umbrage that you feel like you need to strike back. If they're not doing the job, vote them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's your answer. If they're not doing the job, communicate that to them. Not by a firebomb, not by taking it out on their family.
Exactly. Yeah.
Somebody, you know, close to them, not by, oh man. I mean, you know, I run across people that I've never met who are absolutely just 100% angry with me because of something that has happened to somebody they know.
Right.
Why are you mad?
Right.
I didn't do it to them, and I really didn't do it to you. I made a decision. Leaders, make your decision and then be strong enough, man and woman enough, to justify, to explain your decision. And then you got to kind of move on. Can't wallow in it. You can't get engaged in the back and forth. Social media is not the place for you to have this discussion.
Right.
You've got a platform. You've got a pulpit.
Right.
When the moment comes for the decision to be made, explain what your decision is and then live with it and move on. I don't see that happening like it should happen.
Will Robeson said, no respect for them nor the position that they hold is sad and very disappointing and embarrassing.
Yeah, it really does feel embarrassing. I don't want my people to be constantly embroiled in matters that are majoring in the minors.
Majoring in the minors. Woo, you're dropping them today. We're going to get this on. We're going to recycle those. Yeah.
Let's get bigger, right?
Yeah, yeah.
WUVS wasn't created because you were sitting around drinking Yoo-hoos and WUVS was created because you sat down, you had a vision, you saw something,
right,
and you sought out what you needed to make it a reality. There are answers, City of Muskegon Heights. Some of them really, really, really don't feel good. But there are answers.
Yeah.
When you go to the doctor, you don't go and say, "Doctor, heal me, but only do it if it feels good."
Mm.
You go to the doctor and say, "Hey, man, I'm hurting and I need some help. And I'm going to listen to and follow your professional advice because you've been trained, you have the resources, you have the understanding to help me to be better." City of Muskegon Heights, you gotta tap into some of that.
Judd, do you ever get consulted like from elected officials around the community? Like, because you've been in the government, you was a school board member, and you've been connected to a lot of agencies. Do you ever get consulted?
Not really. And that's cool. That's cool.
Wow.
Not really. You know, there are folks who we carry on some conversation. I'll say it this way, PA, not like I used to.
Not like you used to, but you would answer the call, right?
I would make myself available to talk to anybody who wants to hash over an idea, a thought, if they honestly thought my opinion would have some value in the scheme of the decision that they believe they have to make. Because that's what I've done. That's what you've done. Mm-hmm. You've sought out people. Rob, that's what you've done. You sought out people.
I traveled all over this country before we mm-hmm. put the building together mm-hmm. just to get advice mm-hmm. from people who have done it before me.
Yes.
Even from the chartering of the business to everything.
Yeah.
To everything. True. You got to seek out people who know
who
and willing to guide you.
The Bible says that there is nothing new under the sun. What does that mean? That means somebody has been here.
Yeah. And done it.
Somebody has done this. Somebody has done it well.
Right.
Find them. One of the things about people, and one of the things that we talked about, the difficulty that we see with Black folks and the institutions they run. One of the things about, I think about Black folks that I am proud of and find to be endearing is that Black folks are forgiving.
Yeah.
Black folks are forgiving. Oh, no, the fight might be, you know.
Right.
Right. It might be on and popping.
In the heat of it.
But we are probably a as forgiving a people as you will ever run across. Grace. Because we have done it over and over, over and over again since our comings to this, to these shores.
That's the God in us.
There are people mm-hmm. who have the knowledge and the resources and the connections, and all they want, all they would expect is if you give them a call, they will inundate you with information and knowledge that will be helpful to you. But what gets in our way? Pride.
Pride. 231-722-8338. Got a few more minutes with the Honorable Judge Pittman in the studio. Are you taking a summer vacation, Judge?
Let's see. How's that going to work this year?
Oh, you haven't planned it?
Hmm?
You haven't planned it?
No, man. No. I, PA, man, my money is so funny right now. Bruh. My money is so funny, man.
Paul thinks only his money is funny. No, Nobody else's money is funny.
Mine is non-existent. It's not even funny.
No, man. Paul, no, man. Paul is like on his show on the Unfiltered World. They were talking about Beyonce going to Brazil and staying on her plane because they didn't have an hotel. That's his money. Mm-hmm. Paul didn't want to bust the sweet lady out and say, "Well, you know, my plane is over there too." You know? soon as I get done talking to you,
I messed up. They didn't have a Marriott, but yeah. Thank you for watching, Judd. And you actually watch, Rob. Yeah. I just texted this to you yesterday.
Yeah,
and you watch. Oh, wow.
Listen,
so grateful, man. So grateful.
It's important. You're important to me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And what you do means something to me.
Oh, man.
And I will follow to the ends of the earth what it is that you guys do, man. Y'all mean something to me. So
okay, now you don't get it.
So
no, you don't want to see me crying.
Yeah. Whoa.
And that's what, listen, man, that's we need more of that. Amongst all of us, man.
And the same here, Judge. You know.
I remember before he was judge, he was just attorney.
A magistrate. Yeah, attorney, then magistrate.
No, I met him when he was attorney Pittman.
Oh, he defended you.
Well, before that, I was that little Pittman boy from Reardon Street. And that's what we forget, man. You know? I'm looking at my man. I'm looking at PA.
Uh-huh.
We kicking it around in Lindbergh in the same hallways. He's the young kid, and, you know. And I'm looking at him, and he's standing here, and he's enlightening and educating the world about a version of Brazil and other countries that you're going to go to.
Yeah.
How could I not be proud of that, man, and support that?
Thank you, Josh.
We sit chills. Back a lot of times, us as Black people, and try to count my pockets, PA's pockets.
Man, you done preached.
We try to count that. What they don't know, the sacrifices that you made, that Paul made,
that
to
you
be
made.
Where you guys are. You had to sacrifice a lot of nights and nine parties to get that law degree, pass that law test, to find a place that'll hire a black man. You know, and I said it like that, a black man, not, you know, somebody else of a lighter hue, but a black man. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy back in those days. PA, people don't know. He'll sell his car in a minute. He will. And so,
I donate blood now. I don't sell cars. I donate blood. My blood is royalty now.
You will buy a car, you'll see it in about 2 weeks. It's and gone. Then the next day,
I have a car lot. I'm right. Selling blood, Jeff.
You be like, oh, I don't even like it no. more. I need some money. I need to go here. You know, people think that you guys are rich, that we're all rich.
Wait,
in
hold it.
Money.
Hold it. We're not going to let him get away with this.
Yeah.
So Rob is the cat on the set that's going to go for, you know, I'll tear the club up for you. I ain't, you know. If you knock our buck. But the real story is college graduates.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
All his boys, children. All his boys. All his boys.
His son works in the courts with me.
Juvenile probation.
Handles himself magnificently. I mean, just again, a black man.
A black man.
He's a black man who excels in working with these young people through that probation situation. All of your children, man. See, that didn't happen by accident either.
No, that was their mama. I ain't had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I know. She was merciful enough to give your rag the tail a shot. And you had the good sense and decency to shut up and listen to her.
Yeah.
And in the outcome is just wonderful young people who are going to make all of us and continue to make all of us proud. So you ain't getting away with it.
And they follow his footsteps. And being he was a sheriff, deputy sheriff, and they all in criminal justice.
All of them got criminal justice degrees. Yeah, their undergrads are criminal justice.
Wonderful, man.
In 2 years, I have 4 master's degrees from my children. And they give us their degrees, me and their mom, you know, as a way of thanking us.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's wonderful.
And that's means more to me than anything, coming from where I come from and how I grew up and how I had to be greeted in this world. I love each and every day of it, man. And it's because of guys. I know guys like y'all, too. You know, you got to think about it. Paul, you know, been around all my kids. You been around my kids. And stuff like that, not as intensive as Paul has, but you know, when they talk about, you know, black men, your name, PA's name, come up in there.
I appreciate that
brunch.
Thank you.
Well, they had you, bro. You was there every day, though.
Yeah. I hope the folks who are listening aren't saying, "Oh man, come on, man, y'all." You gotta celebrate.
Yeah, each other.
You gotta celebrate who we are.
Yeah. Right?
Speaking of, as we got 3 days before Juneteenth, how did that make you feel that, you know, that you're like the dream of the ancestors? You are I don't know your title down at the courthouse because you've been chief judge, you've been all those judges, but you're one of the highest ranking judges now in Muskegon County.
Yeah, I'm the oldest guy on the bench.
I'm the senior judge
out of all 11.
You're the senior judge.
I'm the senior guy.
Black, you didn't get rid of your black card. You know what I mean?
No, he didn't.
You still go to the liquor store on Hackley, or the one on Bernie or whatever. You know, wherever they have it there, you still got it.
He still goes to a black barber.
He don't need black neighborhood. Barber. Yeah, still go to Kenny Moon.
Yeah, it's like.
You didn't change.
It's like,
you married a beautiful sister. You know?
Got your back all the
Married
way.
Way over my head.
You, so, way both, over my head. You and me both.
How did that make you feel as we, because 250 years ago.
Come on, man.
This was not even an idea.
A thought.
None for our ancestors, because they just wanted to be a person. Yes. You know what I mean?
A human being.
Yeah. Not two-thirds. We want to be a person.
Just let me live. Just let me take your foot off my neck and just let me live.
Yeah.
I don't really want nothing from you. Just let me. Listen, man, I'll say it this way. That, again, we are not what we do. We are who we are. And one of the things I think you can hold your head up about, Rob, you can hold your head up about, one thing that I know I can hold my head up about is that what I do does not define who I am, and it does not confine me to having to hide who I am from anybody, whether it's the $850 an hour lawyer who comes into my courtroom, or whether it's the brother who's looking for, a cat who need 50 cent to finish paying for what he need to pay for. Who, but for the grace of God, who are we?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Are right.
So, when people, it bothers you sometimes, man, when people look at you and call you a sellout, or call you, you doing this, or you destroying lives, or you doing this, that, and the other. It won't ever stop me from going where I want to go.
Right.
Being with who I want to be with, and being in that circle, because what I do with the very, 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 very best of intention.
Right.
I do it the very best I can. I think I'm incredibly competent at what I do.
Right.
And I think I don't ever set out to purposely hurt anybody. If pain comes, it comes as a result of what is involved. But it's not because I am the one foisting that pain on anybody. So as a result, I don't fear. I don't squelch away from being where I want to be. And where I want to be is with us.
Man. Yeah. Judge, you sound like somebody who don't have any hatred towards anybody.
Oh, there's plenty of folks probably I don't necessarily see eye to eye with. Mm-hmm.
Do you hate them?
But No.
And that's a good, because there's some people who really, really wronged you.
Yeah.
We know that. In this room, we know that.
Yeah, definitely.
But, and for you to sit here and say you don't hate them shows the character of who you are.
Well, thank you, man.
That says a lot, because I know, because you sound like it, like you'd have moved on, because some people can hold on that hate, and it'll eat them up.
Yeah.
It will.
It will consume you. It will become your life.
It will consume you, man. God has been so good to me, so much better than I deserve with what he has blessed me with from the minute I hit this earth realm, to this very second. That who would I be to diminish the God that has been so kind to me to live in that state of unrepentant bitterness and anger? Because that's not what he intends for me. No, don't get it. I ain't super Christian. Ain't nobody going to put me at the front of the line. But the blessings that I have experienced and what I have lived and gained over these 65 years, man, it would just be wrong to dwell on that stuff. I'm not, brother, I ain't gonna major in the minors. And that's a minor.
Mm-hmm.
It's ugly. You hate it. You mad. You won't fight.
Right.
And all of that. But in the cold contemplation of what your life looks like in the totality of the circumstances, it's small.
Wow. Live at Donovan with Judge Pittman. We might as well sign off in a few minutes, Rob. Ain't no sense of going. In a few minutes, we just sign off, because ain't no sense of coming back.
Not behind this.
Forgiving us, Judge.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's been time you might have wronged somebody.
Yes, sir.
How did you redeem that?
My parents, especially my mother, really taught us how to say I'm sorry. You can't get too big to be able to say you're sorry. And you know, there's some moments, boy, where that's a man, you rather eat dirt with a worm in it
than say I'm sorry.
Even
though you know. Yeah.
But if you know that you've wronged somebody, then it's incumbent upon you to do that. And listen, brother, I'm not gonna sit here and say I've always done it. I don't think any of us have always hit that mark.
Right.
No.
But my endeavor is to do that. I give you a small example, real quick example. Mm-hmm. I was on the bench. I was dealing with a case, and it was a really bad case. You all would recognize the name if I said who the person was, because he's just been a thorn in my side for years. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I mistakenly spoke about the circumstance, the position of the case, and I was wrong. Mm. And when I went back and, you know, reviewed what I needed to review and just moving forward, I realized that I was wrong.
Okay.
And I went back the next time we were back in court, I went on the record and I apologized.
Wow.
I told him, you know, I'm sorry. I misspoke. I was wrong about, you know, what I was wrong about, and I'm offering you my apology
on the record.
On the record, this dude turns around and files motions for me to recuse myself because I am mentally incompetent and I'm not up to being able to conduct the litigation in a manner that is expected of a sitting trial court judge. So, you know, what's the lesson that could come out of that? Stop apologizing and you won't have to deal with this garbage. Mm-hmm. But that's not the lesson. The lesson is that if out of all of that, that's what you got, I pity you more than you have inconvenienced me.
Mm. Mm.
Wow. Can you imagine so many arguments that could have been prevented? Deaths that could have been prevented? Fights that could have been prevented over just an apology?
Man, oh man, oh man.
That conflict resolution thing, like that. That's, I think, as a people, I think that's where our biggest struggle is at.
Yes.
Solving conflicts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Solving disagreements.
Yes. Taking a step back. And man, in 2026, ain't nobody stepping back. Am I right?
They're going for it. Yeah,
nobody is stepping back.
Yeah. Well, I got a comment from Attorney T. Smith. He said, representation is inspiration. The mantle has been carried. From T. Smith. Attorney T. Smith.
Amen. Young T.
Yes, yes.
Well, he ain't as young as he. And that work you're doing up there at the city is helping the add an age or two on.
Yeah, he's probably the one. You mentioned $850 an hour. What, you talking about him? I heard you say $850. Like, man, they ain't making that much money.
Oh yeah.
Oh bro, man,
he the wrong feel.
Man, yeah. I had a lawyer on a divorce case from Grand Rapids. This dude, because he's seeking the other side to help pay the fees for his client.
Okay. Wow.
So he's got to submit his bill. He's got a $57,000 bill in this divorce.
$57,000. They couldn't work that out.
$57,000. I think this cat Bill, I think he bills at like 600 an hour.
600 an hour?
Yeah, bro.
How is that possible? What is he doing special?
What is he doing? Well, he had to submit his bill for me to review, to, you know, to make a decision about the amount of attorney fees, if any, that I would award in this case.
But they be having private investigators too, though, right?
Well, you
that's
know,
included in that rate.
Well, possibly.
Yeah,
possibly.
Not always.
So, that ain't always, bro. That's a lot of money, man. You got to be some other stuff going on. Man.
I said, if I ever get a win the Mega Million or Powerball, I'm going to have a lawyer on $1 million retainer.
For what?
Just in case.
I'll take it.
Let me take it.
Hey, I give it to you.
I'll take it.
Gladly. With a smile on my face.
T. Smith said, I'm 4-state licensed. I'm worth $650 an hour.
Yeah, but that, can you get $650?
So do defense attorneys in like these high-profile criminal cases get that kind of money?
Well, you know, in criminal cases, attorneys generally kind of hit it with a flat fee.
Okay.
Versus the hourly rate.
Okay.
So, but these top, so, you know, John Beeson, mm-hmm. you know, which who I thought was just a magnificent, is a magnificent defense attorney. You know, John was getting some folks pretty good, man.
He's the big dog. That's the big dog. But he earned it though. He earned it.
I have a friend over in Detroit. I'm not going to use his name, but he's in the business, and man, it 25 down mm-hmm. to get started.
Oh wow!
Is the first conversation?
$25,000.
Yeah, put 25 on the table, and then we can talk. You know, on the way to 75.
Oh wow. Yeah, stay out of trouble, family. All right.
Stay out of the divorce.
The 850 person, they only working 2 hours then. That's probably what it is.
Well, you know, one of the tricks is that if you're an attorney, you have other people working under you. So you're billing at 850 if you're involved. You may have an associate who's doing a lot of legwork that you might be billing at 200, okay. 250. For the work that they're doing. When I was an associate, I worked for Ted Williams. Remember Ted?
Yes.
So, you know, even back then, and we're talking about the mid 90s, Ted was billing probably around $350 an hour. That's a lot of money back in the day.
In the 90s.
As an associate, uh-huh. the work that I did on the cases that he was involved in, he would bill me out at $100, $150. You know, so that's how you kind of keep a lid on it, you know.
Okay, Judge. Jake Kilgore said, thank you for being a leader in the community, Your Honor.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Motu is down the street from you, around the corner.
What's that?
Motu. The community.
It's a wine lounge.
Oh, no, man.
Yeah, for executives.
I don't know anything about that wine lounge, man. Is that the new place that the brothers opened up down?
Yeah, you just met the father.
Oh, is Mr. Jelks involved in that?
Yeah,
and his wife. I didn't know that.
Yeah, very nice. When I walked inside, I thought about you.
Oh,
thought about the cube.
This would be some place that Judge and his wife would go.
It's so me and Kay were out driving when they were still getting together, and we pulled up on them, you know, and had a good conversation. They were probably about, he said, we're probably about 30 days out, and we haven't made it there yet. But Brother Jelks is a professor at IU.
Yeah, his son, Jonathan. That's his business. Yeah.
National championship.
IU. You see how he slid that in?
Yeah, you got to. They earned it. Before we go, happy birthday to Tyrone Williams. And we got two people on the birthday list who are no longer with us, but we got to honor them, Slim Ray and Bishop Nathaniel Wells. Birthday would have been today.
Bishop Wells would have been today too?
Yeah, his birthday would have been today. Yeah.
So you talking about going to people and getting what they have to offer? That was a go-to for me.
Yeah, we lost a lot.
He was a go-to for me in a couple situations, man. You got to go to these people, man.
Yeah.
Anything else before we go, Judge?
No, man. Thank y'all for letting me freestyle a little bit. you know, we're on radio, but this is just us sitting
around talking.
Yeah, we're catching up.
And kicking.
And we're grateful for everybody that was listening.
DJ
Q89 is coming up next with Michaela. Take care, Judge.
Thank y'all, man. Good to see y'all. Love you.
Love you too, bro.